been out by Larry King about disclosure from top military brass, and welcome me back, Stan. You hear me, right?
Yeah, I'm with you, and I've been following the story. It's an interesting story indeed.
It's very interesting. Before we get to that, I read an email from you that you've got yet another book coming out, Flying Saucers and Science.
Yeah, it's not written yet. It'll be written by January 15th. I have pledged my left arm, and it'll be out in the late spring. It'll be my magnum opus, if you will. I've written lots of papers over the years on various aspects of the UFO phenomenon. This is an attempt to put it all in one volume, you know, a textbook for courses on flying saucers are real or something like that.
Yeah, I guess this new information is going to be a chapter, yeah?
What information?
The new information that we've got about military disclosure?
Well, yeah, that'll be part of it. There's always been plenty of data available to establish that governments have been covering up UFOs, and it was good to see the people who came forward last Monday at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C.
Can you update us on that? Because a lot of us aren't privy to any of the behind-the-scenes information. So
well,
I'd like to just update everybody the fact that Larry King had the program on where he was talking about and interviewing people that were coming out to speak. People that were so-called credible people that were now divulging their experiences of seeing UFOs. And what interests me, and I'm sure you too, is why now and what is the real story behind the mainstream media suddenly getting all excited about ETs?
Well, I'm not sure how excited they are. They're at least more open than they were. There's a variety of different responses to what happened. Larry had a program on the 12th of November in which he had James Fox, Fife Symington. Now, James is the pusher behind both the Larry King Show and this Washington, D.C. press conference with Leslie Keene, who's part of the Coalition for Freedom of Information. They're the ones who have just won a great victory with NASA being forced by a judge, federal court judge, to seek out the data on the Keksberg case from the 60s. This has taken 4 years to get to the point where the judge made a ruling, and NASA kept saying, oh, we've done everything we're supposed to do. What do you want from us? And the judge said, oh, no, you haven't. And so an order has been written for them to give out their information. And people may wonder, wait a minute, you said NASA. What are they doing in this picture? Well, NASA has carefully avoided dealing with the question of UFOs. But when the same group, Leslie and NBC, the science fiction channel, went after Keksberg information, they got some stuff from the Army, because the Army, Keksberg is a small town in Pennsylvania, east of Pittsburgh. I lived back there in the late 60s, and a man named Stan Gordon, an outstanding researcher, had collected loads of information, and they were using Freedom of Information many years later to try to get more of an official record of what was carted off by the Army. And the Army gave them a little information and then referred them to NASA, which gave them a little more, and then said, oh, that's all we have, folks. Goodbye. And so it's taken 4 years for the force of the courts to be used to get NASA to really dig into the information. There has to be more. That's clear from what little we got. So that was a big victory. And the same people, Leslie Keene and now James Fox, who did the movie Out of the Blue, and he's working on another movie, I'm in Out of the Blue, and he's got a lot of testimony from a lot of people. It's a good, one of the better documentaries that's been done, frankly. And so
the movie's called Out of the Blue?
The movie was Out of the Blue.
Great
and,
title.
I think the new one is going to be Beyond the Blue. So he's put together both the effort that was on Larry King and an active effort to drag in outstanding people from all over the world. First time I've seen such a collection of people, a retired general, military general from Iran, who was heavily involved in the case in the mid-70s, and we know about the case. We've managed to get some information under Freedom of Information. This is where two different American jets flown by Iranian pilots, they were our allies once, as people tend to forget, went after a UFO that had been seen by lots of people, including the general who scrambled the pilots, north of Tehran, capital of Iran, and their systems went out when they tried to shoot it down, and which is kind of scary. I mean, an American plane, and suddenly you can't fire the Sidewinder missile, and another one...
And of course, it's kind of scary for the UFOs thinking that they're being shot at.
Well, yeah, they seem to be adjusting to the fact that we like to shoot them down. Well, way back in 1952, orders were given to American pilots, which hopefully have been rescinded, to shoot them down if they don't land when instructed to do so.
You're not serious.
I'm serious, and they were serious. I mean, you can think of all the cartoons with, you know, different ways of looking at that. Matter of fact, the head of the American Rocket Society wrote a letter to President Truman saying he didn't think that was a good policy. But anyway, here we are in the mid-70s, and the jets were scrambled and trailed the UFO and tried to shoot it down, and it sent the second plane went up and also tried, except its systems wouldn't work, and something came out of the UFO, which came back and made a pass at our airplane. I mean, the Iranian plane, it was, like I say, it was an American plane, manufactured an F-4, I guess. And
something came out like a weapon, you mean?
Yeah, a little sub-system that went out and was chucking things out. And they watched this thing land, and then they ran out of fuel, came back. It was seen by a... another airliner, and so this is just one of the many stories that were told at the national press conference, but a retired general now we're talking, who then was a pilot chasing a UFO. Another one came from a pilot in Peru who was involved in their UFO investigations. He tried to shoot down one, sent a bunch of cannon shells into it, but nothing seemed to happen. There was a guy, an Air France pilot, about a sighting by him and his crew and some of the passengers on the plane of this huge thing, maybe 1,000 feet in size, behaving in an extraordinary fashion. And so there were a whole bunch of these people. Colonel Halt, who was an American Air Force officer, second in command at the base in eastern England, when something landed, he took notes on a tape machine of this thing in the forest there. There was a Sergeant Peniston who was also there, who actually touched something that had come down. He was on the Larry King show as well as Colonel Halt. And so there were a bunch of these. Oh, another one was Claude Poher, who was head of the French UFO investigative effort, and claims that he has worked out some experimental techniques. He's an astrophysicist. Some experimental techniques that demonstrate some of the stranger characteristics of UFOs. And I'm trying to find out more about that. He talks about patenting it, but I'm waiting to see what that's all about. Anyway, this
group... That sounds interesting.
There was a moderator for this group of guys... named Fife Symington, who's the ex-governor of Arizona, who had come forward earlier this year admitting that he had observed the Phoenix Lights, the 830 sighting in Phoenix, Arizona on March 13, 1997, of this extraordinary Delta Wing craft at night, blocked out the sky, and it turns out Fife was an Air Force pilot. And so, as you know, is quite familiar with standard aircraft and stuff. And so, there are a bunch of these.
So let me interject here that we don't agree with the official story that that was hot air balloons. I take it.
Well, they said that it was flares, but those were dropped at 10 o'clock, not at 8:30, and they were lights that were many miles beyond Phoenix. Dr. Bruce Maccabee has triangulated from three different hunks of film that were taken of the flares at 10 o'clock, And clearly they were not what was seen at 8:30 by literally thousands of people. People were out to see the Hale-Bopp comet, and it was a beautiful,
right,
clear night, and Phoenix can get nights like that. And I had somebody complain, why didn't they take pictures of it? Well, nobody looking for a comet. A comet is a very small region in the sky. You know, expects to pick up anything with a standard camera. I mean, if you've got a big telescope and a nice camera, you might get a picture or not. But
we do. Yeah, I have seen footage of the Phoenix lights. It's quite remarkable.
Well, you got to be careful. The Phoenix lights is the press blended these two events: the 8:30 sighting of this huge triangular-shaped thing moving silently from north to south over Phoenix down toward Tucson from the direction of Prescott. And these relatively rapidly falling flares from the National Guard, which were dropped at 10 o'clock. And people want to mix these two together. Well, they're not the same thing. Unfortunately, that doesn't keep the press from mixing them together. But
well,
anyway,
maybe that's deliberate, don't you think?
Well, it could be. Fife Symington moderated this discussion at the National Press Club. There were lots of people there, and an old curmudgeon in ufology, Richard Hall, said it's the best press conference he's ever been to, and he's been going to these things for 50 years. He's written a book, The UFO Evidence, well, and a couple of others as well. And so it was a good outing, and there were bits and pieces on CNN and on Fox. There was a certain amount of the usual ridicule, and there was a focus on Dennis Kucinich, the candidate, a Democratic candidate for president, admitting that he had seen a UFO. This is reported in Shirley MacLaine's new book, Saging and Aging, something like that. And so he took some joking from people. Kucinich did at the debate back a little while ago. But
he speaks his truth.
Well, he had a sighting, and I mean, this should be no surprise. Governor Reagan had a sighting when he was governor of California. I talked to the pilot on the plane, a guy with 30,000 hours as a pilot, mind you. I mean, this is a very experienced pilot. He saw it. The other people on the plane saw it. And President Carter has had a sighting. He's trying to back up a little bit from that. Well, he saw something. We don't know what it was, but, well, I don't know that it was an alien spacecraft. It didn't show any license plates or anything, you know. But this ensemble of people in Washington got a lot of coverage on television. Reuters did a nice article. It appeared in a lot of newspapers, and hopefully it will encourage what they put out a kind of, I'd hate to call it a manifesto, but a statement about a page and a half. And what they're looking for is for governments to open up and start collecting data again. The United States closed Project Blue Book in 1969 and says, oh, we don't have anything to do with it. And one thing that didn't happen, and I was a little disappointed at this, nobody around the table pointed out that the Project Blue Book was canceled because of a memo from a General Carol Bolander, Air Force General, who was asked in 1969 to what should we do about Blue Book, who concluded that it should be canceled, but included in his memo from October 1969, he stated that, moreover, reports of UFOs which could affect national security would continue, in the previous paragraph he said, reports of UFOs which could affect national security are made in accordance with Joint Army-Navy Air Force Publication 146 or Air Force Manual 55-11 and are not part of the Blue Book system. Now, that's a real shocker, but two paragraphs later he says, if we close Project Blue Book, the public won't have a place to report UFO sightings. However, as previously noted, reports which could affect national security will continue to be processed using the regulations established for that purpose. In other words,
which means there's a lot of gibberish. What does that basically mean?
What it means is the good stuff didn't go to Project Blue Book.
Yeah, right.
I located General Bolander, And another, let me give you an example. Suppose a UFO goes down the runway at a Strategic Air Command base at which nuclear weapons are stored, and which is certainly off flying limits for normal airplanes. That's a national security problem because of the nuclear weapons and so forth. Right?
Although there were people like me that would be thinking that the nuclear facility is a universal security problem.
Well, this is nuclear weapons. I'm not talking about nuclear reactors. But anyway,
yeah, that's what I mean.
The good stuff like that. I mean, suppose a UFO came along and zapped a military airplane. That's a national security problem. Blue Book, that wasn't Blue Book's business. They were a repository.
Well, if we would just stop shooting at them, maybe it wouldn't be such a threat.
Well, yeah, what all I'm saying is that I don't want Blue Book reconstituted the way it was because it wasn't doing the job that I'm interested in having done. I'm interested in the good sightings by military planes, multiple witness radar visual sightings. We have plenty of them on record. But Blue Book, well, let me prove that.
But they don't really want us to be reporting these things clearly and professionally, do they?
Well, the government doesn't want the public to report to them because they will tell you in letters if you write that we have determined that there's no threat to the national security from flying saucers, that no report collected, evaluated, and investigated by the United States Air Force gives any evidence of being a threat to the security of the United States. Now, you notice if any of those three functions was done by somebody else, say the Navy or NASA or Operation Majestic 12 or any of these other groups, it would still be a true but totally meaningless statement. And the point is that they say that they're not interested in UFOs, but if you check the pilot manuals for our latest military jet fighters and interceptors, F-16, 17, 18, that sort of thing, you will find specific instructions for pilots what they should do should they observe an unidentified surface ship, an unidentified submarine, an unidentified airplane. We're trying to prevent another Pearl Harbor, in other words, or an unidentified flying object. They are immediately to make reports, file a service, CIRVIS report, communication instructions for reporting vital intelligence sightings. Anyway, so on the one hand, John Greenwald, who has the website Black Vault, which has thousands of pages of documents about UFOs, on the one hand, they're saying it's none of our business, and on the other hand, they're telling their pilots to report them, their military pilots. So nobody mentioned this at the session in Washington, unfortunately, but we will try to, it was all filmed for Jim's next movie, Beyond the Blue.
The Blue.
And I'm hoping that there will be further appearances by these people, because there was another day of presentations. I have the text. It's available on the Internet, the transcripts of the statement.
I was going to ask you, did you actually go to this press conference?
No, I didn't. I had been in Hawaii until that very day, as a matter of fact. And it was for government people. I'm not a government person. Well, you could say anti-government, if you will.
I would never have said that.
Well, it's okay. Look, I'm a dual citizen of Canada and the United States. It is my right to complain about both of those governments anyway.
Yeah, but it's not as safe to do that as it used to be.
Well, the world's a funny place. UFOs are seen all over the world, and we try to act as if they're only observations by incompetent observers seeing things under poor circumstances. That's if you believe the debunkers. Matter of fact, Larry King had a debunker on his program on the 12th. James McGaha, retired Air Force pilot, with thousands of flying hours and also over 1,000 parachute jumps. And I think something's got dislodged in his brain because he didn't come across very well. I know, James, we did a full formal debate at Middle Tennessee State University back in January of 2004. As a matter of fact, there's a video, Are Flying Saucers Real, which has the formal debate with a live audience, a moderator, And I found that he really hadn't studied the evidence. He did his research by proclamation. He half accused the other members on the program of lying, but he wouldn't commit himself to that. Larry kept saying, are you saying these guys are lying? No, they're just mistaken. I'm glad to see debunkers like him, because he sure doesn't come across well. He's not slick like Michael Shermer, who was with me on Larry King on July 13th. He came across much better. And I'd take him on any time. I did on Coast to Coast Radio on August the 1st, and 80% of the listeners said that I won the debate. So, you know, you get a chance once in a while to do that.
But I'll tell you what, I wouldn't want to be on the other side of a debate with you, because, first of all, you've got such a wealth of wisdom and data and knowledge that I ask myself, how can your brain store all these dates and precision? I have, of course, the other kind of brain that's not very logical.
Well, but I was in high
school. You're so precise. I mean, good God.
I was in debating in high school, and one of the things I learned, and the people I debate don't seem to have learned that, is to be effective, you have to know both sides of the question. You have to have studied the other guy's evidence. And it's one of the characteristics of the nasty, noisy negativists who make public pronouncements about UFOs. They haven't studied the other evidence. They keep saying there isn't any evidence, which is a good excuse not to look up any evidence. And, you know,
it's pretty foolish to say there isn't any evidence.
Well, look, I gave it in all my lectures. At the beginning of the lecture, I cover 5 large-scale scientific studies. And after each one, I ask, how many people here have read this? I have a slide. I tell them what's in the report and so forth. And I rarely get more than 2% of the audience. And one of the lectures I gave, in which I discussed these, was on the Queen Elizabeth II. I gave 3 lectures on its last westward passage. Also on the ship was Dr. Seth Shostak of the SETI Institute. And I attended his lectures. He attended mine. Now, when I asked that question after each of the major studies, he didn't raise his hand at all. And when we debated on Coast to Coast many months, 6 months later, he still hadn't done any homework. All I could say was, there is no evidence, meaning he's too lazy to check it. I read a couple of his books before I went on the ship, and with Dr. Shermer, Larry King, before I went on Coast to Coast to debate him, I read one of his books and tossed back at him things that he had said. He did no homework at all between the two. And, you know, if people go to my website, www.stantonfriedman.com, and Friedman is Friedman. I had somebody
write. Fried, right?
Man. Stantonfriedman.com. Well, I mentioned the spelling because if you spell it wrong, you won't get the website. You know,
right.
And some people will spell it F-R-E-E-D or F-R-E-I-D. Or
no, it's
F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N. Anyway, if you go there, you'll see lots of articles, lots of references, lots of, you can buy my books, of course, and the videos and so forth. But it is truly incredible that people claiming to be scientists will express strong opinions about a subject about which they know nothing. They haven't done their homework.
Right.
That's
but there's
not
always
science.
Just a huge, much bigger audience of deniers than, if there is such a word, than people who are open to listening to facts. And we certainly have plenty of facts pointing to not only the reality of the ET UFO situation, but the imminent, well, the shift in what's happening now. And I'm interested in your opinion about the real meaning of the real purpose. I just don't think this is an accident that we're suddenly being given mainstream information about what's been held back. I just can't believe it. I think we are looking at the possibility that we are getting close to disclosure now. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm not satisfied that we're going to see much disclosure unless the media picks up the ball and runs with it. You know, we do sort of like the Watergate investigation by the Washington Post. We'll see what comes out of this effort. What I'd like to see is some young reporters from, you know, the New York Times and the Washington Post, who don't need to worry about admitting they have ignored the story for 60 years because they're not that old, do as much effort on the cosmic Watergate as was done on the political Watergate. Look, you start with people like me, with Dr. Bruce McAbee, with other scientists who have spent time at archives, who have dug into the evidence, and when you look at documents like this one with General Bolander, and there's a whole bunch of others, then it's easy, you know, after you've looked at 160 pages of National Security Agency UFO documents on which you can read about one line per page. Everything else is not blacked out, which is what they used to do, but whited out. Then somebody ought to confront the NSA and says, what's under the whiteout? You say it's sources and methods. Surely 98% of these documents can't be sources and methods information. It's filed under UFOs by you guys. What
right,
else
is
there?
Is confronting the NSA necessarily life-enhancing?
Is it necessarily what?
Life-enhancing. I mean, I don't think they like to be
well,
bothered.
I think if you do it publicly, sure. Look, it's just like the NASA case that I mentioned earlier. You go after them, and you show the evidence. Now, most reporters are totally unaware of these whited-out pages, or go after the CIA. I've got
You know, I think that, I don't mean to say that you're naive, because, of course, you know, I respect you without question, but the idea that a journalist could go after it if he wanted to makes me a little bit curious. Don't you think that even if they wanted to, they get kiboshed by the networks who are basically controlled?
I think that we have to put them in a position of defending actions that they've already taken. I've got CIA documents where you can, UFO documents, by CIA definition, mind you, took me 5 years to get them under Freedom of Information, where you can read 8 meaningless words on the page. Things like a date and stuff like that. So the question has to be to the CIA, okay, this is 25 years old. Executive Order 12958 says that you have to show a reason why you're withholding this information. It's all supposed to be automatically declassified after 25 years unless you can establish a reason. In other words, put them in the light of the glare of publicity, if you want. Most media people, in my acquaintance anyway, and I get around quite a bit, are totally unaware of this vast amount of information that hasn't been released. And they bought into the Air Force nonsense that Blue Book was it. And look, in my book, Top Secret Magic, I have a 5-page response to a letter from the Air Force Congressional Liaison to a Senator, Patty Murray, from Washington State, giving her the latest scoop, which is the same as it was 15 years before, the Air Force position. And it is so full of holes that I wrote a 5-page letter, which is in my book, and I think any journalist looking at that would say, hey, he's right. They're not able to provide a sensible response to questions from a U.S. senator. They lie. You know, that's a strong word, but I have an article on the website, www.stantonfriedman.com, called Government UFO, Government UFO Lies. And I list lies from a number of different agencies.
Oh, now, that sounds like a good thing to click onto, folks. Be sure and check it out.
And, you know, I say that because the press sometimes gets a little excited about a subject. Remember Monica Lewinsky, you know, great importance to national status and position. How much time was taken up by the media on Monica?
We have to look at what was going on behind the scenes while everybody was being distracted with Monica.
Well, yeah, and what I'm saying is they can gird up for war by putting a lot of people on the street to try to get more information. Well, if they do that about UFOs, for example, why not push the government to to grant amnesty for any former military person who wants to talk about a UFO experience more than 50 years ago.
Well, let me interject something here. I just got sent an article that's entitled Famed NASA Astronaut Confirms Extraterrestrial Are Here. Have you read about Dr. Musgrave?
Who was that?
Dr. Story Musgrave.
Story Musgrave. He's one of our... he's an incredible guy, incidentally. I think he's got 3 PhDs, at least 2, and he's been in space numerous hours as an astronaut.
Mm-hmm.
And he's convinced there's other life out there, but...
He talked about seeing a craft that was approximately 50 to 150 feet in diameter, and he said, and I'm going to quote him here, whether it's a wash or debris, ice particles, I don't know, but it's characteristic of the thousands of things which I've seen. What is not so characteristic is it appears to come from nowhere. You would think that if it's facing the dark side or facing a side toward you, which is not reflecting the sun, you would think that you would see something there. It's really impressive. And the article says that he's trying to communicate telepathically with ETs, which I think is just amazing considering he's a, I don't know what his title is.
He was a retired astronaut. He's a retired astronaut. Yeah, he was in, he made several trips to space. An outstanding individual, one of the sharpest guys around, frankly. Yeah, I'm in awe of people like him, because he not only combined the book learning, so to speak, but the pilot capabilities, you know, and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, he's saying that, you see, but we don't have, what I'm saying is, we need to get more of those people to come forward. And we need some, the New York Times, Washington Post, 60 Minutes. I was told many years ago when I knew somebody who was connected with them, they won't touch UFOs with a 10-foot pole, he said. And so it's the lack of courage, because there is this totally false perception that most people don't believe in UFOs, and of course thinking people certainly don't. Well, that's hogwash. I'm just one of the chapters in my new book will be about public opinion in UFOs. And there's been a consistent picture. Not only that there are more believers than non-believers, and I hate that word, but I'm stuck with it, believers, you know. I believe the Dodgers are better than the Yankees. That's belief system. Or the Giants, especially. But the greater the education, the more likely to believe in flying saucers. So.
Sure. I've read a number of polls where they show that people that do believe in ET life and UFOs are consistently shown at about 70% of the population.
Well, yeah, it's a big number. And these guys act, the noisy negativists, make it sound like only kooks and quacks and nuts and little old ladies in tennis shoes believe in UFOs. And look, I put myself out there. I've given over 700 lectures. All 50 states, 9 Canadian provinces, and 16 other countries. And I come on very strong. I'm not an apologist ufologist or a closet ufologist. The title is Flying Saucers Are, underlined, capitalized, real, exclamation point. So, and I start off by saying some UFOs are alien spacecraft, you know. So I do that, and all kinds of professional groups, engineering societies, and that as well as universities. And I have had only 11 hecklers, and 2 of them were drunk. And you're going to get more than that if you talk about sports, religion, politics, if you take a position, as opposed to being a namby-pamby, maybe something might be interesting here. I commit myself. Some people may say I should be committed, but anyway. Sorry. And what I'm saying is, if these darn media guys would recognize, well, I'll give you an example. I spoke to a convention of Canadian journalists, which was held about 60 miles from my house in St. John, New Brunswick. They asked me to give a lecture, and I gave my usual hard-hitting, positive, strong lecture. And I got a letter back saying that the guy who had arranged things, I've never seen so many journalists change their mind about something so quickly when they saw how much data you had that they hadn't been aware of. And that's the kicker, I think. If you get a chance to put
that out there. All right, Stan, I got a question for you.
What?
I would like to know your opinion as to the following. What do you think will happen? Because I really believe that contact is very, very imminent. And I don't mean just, you know, sightings. I'm talking about global contact. My first question is, do you think so too? And the second question is, what would happen, in your opinion, and I'm talking conjecture now. I know you don't like to do that because you're a scientist. When we start seeing fleets of craft flying over major cities and obviously making contact, what do you think?
Well, I don't think the world would panic. Again, I think what we need is a direct contact and, you know, make it safe for aliens to land. They tried over Washington, D.C. in 1952, and we sent up airplanes to try to shoot them down. They were picked up on radar, and there were many trips over a three-week period or so in July.
You think they were trying to make contact?
No, I think they were checking us out. I mean, that's over the White House and stuff. We don't know that there hasn't been contact on a secret level between
aliens.
Yes, that's
true. No, I do absolutely believe that there is. I'm talking about global hello.
Well, I think
this is going to happen very soon now.
Well, I hope so. I mean, my book will sell very well if they wait until after the book.
Yeah, mine too.
Now, I think, look,
that's a pretty selfish attitude.
There are major considerations. I think if the government were to announce, you see, I don't want technical data out on the table, because anything that which can help our enemies build better high-performance military offensive and defensive systems is not something that should be put out in the open. And the basic rule for security, very simple line, you can't tell your friends without telling your enemies. So I don't want them to put the plans for our latest high-performance vehicle out where Osama bin Laden can buy it. He's got the money.
Are you talking about aliens?
Well, I'm saying if we have learned about technology, about aliens, you know, how they work, the vehicles, then I don't want that out on the table. Maybe we should say we have learned, but if we have, then why haven't we used it in the wars that we've had? You know, the only reason you spend money to develop better military systems is to use them in wars. There are plenty of wars to go around. I mean, you know, been no shortage, whether it was Korea or Vietnam or the Gulf War.
Yeah, no, we do war very well on planet Earth.
What?
We do plenty of war on planet Earth.
Yeah, and I'm saying if we had figured out how these things work, they'd make wonderful weapons delivery and defense systems. But I don't think the world would panic. I think we need to make the announcement in a careful fashion. I think there are certain things that would happen. In other words, it doesn't need to be War of the Worlds kind of thing.
Right, and I, you know, let us all hope that this Armageddon scenario that's played out by the media is not at all what we're going to experience. Personally, I'm curious to see if the contact information would come from the government or directly from the source.
Well,
because what do you think if you had fleets of highly intelligent, well, manned craft by highly intelligent beings, that they would first of all be able to take over the media?
Well, that's right. I think if they wanted to communicate to us, hey, guys, we're here, stop acting like idiots, which would be a sensible thing to say, I think they could. You know, radio, television, we broadcast all kinds of stuff. Smart aliens could figure out how to send a signal on those same frequencies and so forth. But I think
that, you know, I was going to say, I was thinking television and smart aliens, and it was like, you don't have to be too terribly smart to get our television. No offense to the, the networks.
We're putting out loads of information. We also have radar systems watching the skies and spy satellites watching down, looking down, the radar systems looking up. So we know that they're coming here. We know what their capabilities are. They know we know, because when you've been tracked on radar, you know it. You can tell when the signal starts and stops.
Right, but the concern is that they know what our military response is or interest is. But we're hoping that the human outreach can extend past that barrier.
Well, remember now, they've abducted lots of people. They've examined a lot of specimens, and most of those people have not come forward. their memories have been blocked out, or, look, it's been my experience, only 10% of the people who have a sighting have reported it. I check all my audiences, so many hundreds of audiences. 10% have seen one, but only 10% of that 10% have reported what they have seen because of the fear of ridicule. So if that's just for a standard run-of-the-mill UFO sighting, then how about an abduction case? How likely are people to want to come forward? I mean, admittedly, the best abduction researchers have amongst themselves investigated well over 1,000 cases, but I'm sure that's just the tip of the iceberg. What I'm saying is they picked up specimens. They can also watch our television, which is a scary prospect, you know.
Very scary.
Especially if they watch the commercials and try to figure out what's going on. But
well, they'll figure out that we're supposed to be taking medication.
Well,
above all.
What I'm saying is that I don't think they're going to send fleets over our cities because they know we on the planet know that they are coming here. The governments of the planet know that. So the question is, maybe there's even been an agreement that they're not going to public to go public. They can pick up their specimens, check things out, and we won't shoot at you anymore, guys. Just don't disturb the system per se. Don't go grabbing the president, for example, because that would get messy. Somebody else would take over. Can you imagine if the vice president suddenly became the president right now? That's not a happy prospect.
Isn't he already?
Very good line. I like that. Yeah, that may well be the case. But
well,
you know,
I'd like to also question you then about the crop circle phenomenon. I don't know if you have you visited them at all?
I've been to, in one crop circle. I've looked at a lot of pretty pictures, and frankly, my opinion is that I don't have an opinion as to what these mean or who made them. They're interesting, some of them very exotic, you know, complicated, a whole bunch of circles of differing diameter, for example, in a special pattern and all that.
Yeah,
I don't know what's going on.
I would like to think, for example, that these are communication from other intelligence, maybe multidimensional rather than extraterrestrial.
And well, they may be playing games.
For some reason, I visualize geometric patterns in the sky when these craft start to come, because I do think they're coming. Wouldn't it be amazing to go outside and see, instead of just a few craft here and there, just see a light show going on with geometric kaleidoscope type effect? Which would be a great way to communicate intelligence, wouldn't it?
It would be spectacular. And, you know, you can think of all kinds of reasons for crop circles. Maybe aliens from two different civilizations are competing. Who can make the prettiest and the most complicated and the fastest? And there's a judge up there who, okay, you guys win for that one. Tomorrow we'll meet again at another place. Well, I mean, you know, we tend to forget. We have huge ensembles of people on Sundays in these enormous stadiums, obviously for religious events, those guys in striped shirts, you know, and a whole bunch of guys running at each other. And this is clearly a religious event, except it's called, really, National Football League. And there's soccer games around the world. I mean, there are many colleges that have stadiums that'll seat 100,000 people. Clearly, that's what's important on this planet, isn't it?
So then we've got to get the aliens to communicate on the video screens of the football field.
Hey, how about landing in the middle of the World Series or the Super Bowl? If it's in a stadium
that doesn't
have a roof.
Much better than the Janet Jackson number, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, that would shake people up a bit. What I'm saying is these guys are doing their thing. And people say, why bother now? And I say it's because suddenly, starting, say, with 1945, first atomic bomb, suddenly we're a threat to the other guys in the neighborhood. Anybody with any sense wants to keep, you know, pay attention to its own survival and security. And certainly anybody studying us for any length of time knows we're a primitive society whose major activity is tribal warfare. And they don't seem to be nasty guys. We are. Look, 30,000 children died yesterday of preventable disease and starvation, and today will, and tomorrow, and yet we'll spend $1 trillion collectively on the planet this year on things military. Something's wrong with that, but we keep creating
more viruses to unleash on the public to kill more people.
Hey, that is a common way of life for us. a terrible thing to say, but it's true. In other words, try to look at us from their viewpoint. And so I think they're doing their thing. They know we don't care about life. Why should they? Now, don't ask me what's going
to
happen.
Well, I think that I would like to believe that we've got, just like we've got duality on this planet, that anything that's in the third dimensional construct, any other life forms, there would also be duality of dark and light. And I'd like to think that even though there are the funky ETs, I sound so facetious and I don't mean to be, I would like to think, and I do believe there are also very light ones who will be coming in also.
Well,
not only the ones that are working for the government or the grays or the classic stereotypes that we've got, but that there will be a broad expanse of intelligence that, once the gate is open, will be flooding in here to participate in Earth affairs.
Well, if you look at the book Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience by myself and Kathleen Marden, Betty's niece, you get a certain amount of insight into how the aliens were behaving. They were trying to avoid giving pain. They were curious. They treated them with a certain amount of respect. I mean, they did their thing, but they didn't put a gun to the head or a knife to the back the way we do things. So they don't have a Guantanamo, apparently.
Plus, I remember in the book that at one point she asks for somebody to take back, and he wants to give her a map. The head of the
he shows her a map,
and then the others tell him not to, which would be something that I would consider maybe out of fear.
Well, I think it was out of generosity. We have decided that you won't remember what happened. So why give them anything? Because that might be more distressing. They probably handled other Earthlings who they found had difficulty with the situation, partly because the government hasn't told them there are aliens out there. You know, if your kids wander out into the forest, you tell them there are wolves. But our government hasn't told us there are wolves or good guys or, you know.
Right, but they sure set us up for this to be the next terrorist war on alien terrorists. Can you picture it?
Well, yeah, I can picture. And it's kind of scary. And, you know, blame it on the UFOs when it's really Earth terrorists. The certainly none of the UFO cases that I'm aware of indicate the kind of disrespect for life that, say, suicide bombers have shown. I can't wrap my arms around that idea that it's okay, that parents are proud of children who die as suicide bombers destroying civilians. I mean, you know, I don't understand that.
Well, it's hard to understand that anyone, because we live in a cushy societies, it's very hard for us to imagine the despair that would drive someone to that extreme.
Well, is it despair or is it hope for 77 virgins? I don't know what the motivation is.
Well, I think that anyone that hopes for 77 virgins to arrive at nirvana from that way is in a deep state of despair. And I don't think that's the conversation we need to try to start now that we're about to sign off. But
right. Let's
we'll save that for the next interview, Stan.
Let's talk about.
As usual, the time has just flown. We've already been on. Our time is running out. Have you got any last wisdom that you want to leave with the listeners for tonight?
Well, get ready for thinking about what it means to you if the government has withheld something so important for 60 years, and if aliens are coming here, both of which seem to be true, and doing their thing. Think how that affects your notion of religion, politics, economics, art.
Definitely.
You know, these are things to think about. That's the idea. That's why I write books.
And let's remember that if we do have aliens arriving, it's going to dramatically change the way Jews see Arabs, blacks see whites. I don't know all the other groups that are at war, but when it's us and aliens, it's going to be a whole new paradigm on this planet.
That's right.
And I think it's very interesting that this is coming so close to the time of 2012, which we all see as some kind of heralding of a new way. We don't know what it is, but we certainly seem to pinpoint to this time on the calendars.
Well, I'm an old guy. I hope I'm still around at that time to see what happens.
You'll be around, Stan, because you have to shake people up. That's your job.
That's my job. Okay, I accept. I will continue to shake people up.
Okay, me too. And with that, we have to leave you tonight. Thank you. It's Stan Friedman, www.stanfriedman, F-R-I-E-D.
No, Stanton Friedman.
That's what I said.
No, you said Stan Friedman. It's Stanton Friedman on the...
Stanton, big mistake. So sorry. Stanton Friedman, spelled F-R-I-E-D-M-A-N. com. The man is full of incredible information, and check him out. And Stan, I'm just going to keep having you back until we get tired of each other.
Okay, good.
Okay?
Thanks.
Thank you so much for being on again, Stan, and thank you all for listening in, and we'll be back with you next Sunday with something else that shakes things up and gets you thinking beyond the matrix. Thanks, Stan. Good night.
Good night.